Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show we're talking about glam rock animals. Animals who are glamorous and glitzy, and on occasion also tough as a rock. From the shiny and splendiferous scale worms of the deep to scuba diving lizards, these animals all have one thing in common. They are 100% glam. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, was that Rainbowfish children's book a body horror? Joining me today is friend of the pod, podcast person, frequent voice on Fake Doctors, Real Friends, DJ and Twitch man, Dan L. Goodman.
Hi! How's it going?
Good. Do you mind if I call you Twitchman? Twitchman?
That is perfect. Twitchman is excellent. I'm okay. Honored by the title.
Yeah. I'm a pod woman.
Pod woman.
I feel like I miss the times where it's like blacksmith or, you know, yes. You know what I mean? Like when we had these names like lamplighter or,
Thank you.
Like we have podcaster, but like what about podsmith?
Was just thinking how fun Podsmith would be, to be a
sounds
Podsmith.
Good. Yeah, it sounds like real work, which it's not.
I go to the kilns of Pro Tools and craft strong,
by hand,
rich
hand,
podcast.
Hand-blown podcast. Technically true, because, you know, you breathe out with your mouth as you make mouth sounds. Anyways, we are talking about glam rock animals, animals who are glamorous, incredible looking, the rock stars of the natural kingdom, and their glitzy and glamorous appearance have probably real reasons for it, actual survival reasons, which we will discuss. What do you think of when you think of glam rock?
In general?
Yeah.
There was definitely, I'll tell you a very short story. The very first vintage t-shirt that I ever got at this place on La Brea called Jet Rag was an old Poison t-shirt, a Poison tour t-shirt. And on the back, I think it said rock the fuck out. And my mom didn't see that at the time. So she let me buy this shirt that said fuck on it. And I was like, ooh. So I think of that shirt, but I think of hair. I think of neon. I think of sparkles. I think of like, yeah. So I think of a lot of, like, you know, we're talking wall of sound. We're talking big. So that's what I think of.
Everything big. Hair big. Eyeliner big.
Yes.
You know.
Mega big.
The hole in the ozone from the hairspray big.
Perfect. Yes.
So the first animal we're going to talk about is the Elvis worm, which is named after the king of rock, Elvis. Because it is iridescent and glitzy and glamorous and also kind of an asshole.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's
even
not. I don't think they named it after Elvis because it's an asshole. Mm. But I think it fits, right? Because he was kind of an ass, wasn't he?
That is my understanding, yes.
You know, look, I'm keeping it real. I'm not saying Elvis, it's not cool to like Elvis, but you know,
sure.
Look,
yeah.
He had a big sound, but also a big ego.
That is what I hear. That's my understanding as well.
Shout out to listener Vincent Jorgensen for this idea. I don't know why I have not talked about these on the show before, because they are incredible. They have this rainbow and purple shimmer. Now, Daniel, I want you to look at this little cutie.
I have it pulled up right here, and this is a shimmery looking little worm. How big is this worm?
There you know. I'd say about like palm sized.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's big.
I guess so. Not that big.
Well, okay, fair play, but this is truly an error on my part. But looking at this image, just on the raw, just like stark black of it, it almost felt like a slide. I was ready to be looking at like a microscopic worm here. I was ready for you to say,
oh,
you could fit about 1,000 on your hand right now. I'd be like, ooh, okay.
You know, not super huge, but yeah, they are definitely like not microscopic. You can see them with the naked eye, hold them in your hand, you know, let them crawl all over you.
I would get the willies, I believe it is called. The willies. I'd get the willies very quickly.
I call it the Jimmy skin, but yeah, I mean, that works too.
That's very funny.
But yeah, so they are absolutely beautiful. They look like holographic nail polish or, you know, the most glittery glam that you could find. They were discovered by a team of researchers at Scripps Institute of Oceanography at UCSD. Shout out to my dad, who works at Scripps Institute of Oceanography. He's actually in the ocean physics group, so they deal with the physics of waves, not necessarily the critters, but yeah, you know.
Got it.
Good job, guys. Can't wait to see y'all for a beer, and I'll say, hey, good work on that worm, you know?
good work on that worm.
Good worming, you guys.
Oh, you got me. This I'm looking at this worm also, and it reminds me, you remember that book, The Rainbow Fish?
Yes, yes. Oh man, I love that book as a kid.
Just very similar color scheme of just like that, you know, super iridescent, glowy, but also like some solid color, but also looks like there's just like super flecks of rainbow everywhere.
Yeah.
Just trying to paint as vivid, stoned a picture as I possibly can of this worm I'm looking at right now. You know, man, it's like that book, The Rainbow Fish.
Yeah, because it's like they had this like iridescent, glittery scales on this fish. It was so gorgeous. Fun as a kid because you could like touch it and like feel the like embossed art.
Thank
you. So fun.
Yes.
It was also, I felt kind of sorry for the rainbow fish because it was like he's got all these rainbow scales on him, right? And like his fish friends who don't have those are jealous. So it's a book about sharing. Like you share this with others. And generally speaking, I'm very pro sharing, you know, your resources with others. But it's part of his body. So
yeah, it's definitely like different.
A little strange, right?
Kind of a weird message.
It's like if you were hanging out with friends and you're like, oh, I really like your hair. And you're like, you do? And then you just like cut off a big chunk of your hair. I'm like, here you go. Rip it off.
And that's the thing. And that's the thing with kids that are unpredictable. It's like they'll take the note to the letter. So it's like, I know the story of the rainbow fish. It's about sharing. They're like, okay, so I like rip off my skin for my friends. It's like, no, not quite that.
Well, you know, that is a horrible kindergarten scene that I do not want to see. But these do look like the rainbow fish. They are in fact a worm. I know like sometimes we call things worms, but they aren't really. But they are a worm. They're actually a type of scale worm. And which is actually very distantly related to earthworms, a little more closely related to bristle worms. You may know some bristle worms, like there is, we've talked about some of them on the show, like the bobbit worm, this horrifying tremors like. Were you on the show when I talked about the bobbit worm?
I think I was on the bobbit worm episode.
Wow, I love it. I love how somehow that worked out because I did not plan for that.
I was going to say, I feel like we talked about like I remember you describing something as a tremors like worm, and I was like, wait a minute. Or maybe I was just listening to that episode. Who knows?
Well, I'm flattered either way, but like if it was, if it's a worm that lives under the sand at the bottom of the sea, it lunges out of the sand and will grab onto an unsuspecting fish and pull them back down, sort of like a Trimmer's worm or like Love a it. Sarlacc. But it's also very shiny and iridescent. Now, it's not super closely related to this one, but fairly. It's a bristle worm, so they nice. Are, you know, so scale. But this, the Elvis, it's actually called P. elvisi, because it got to have it sound scientific.
I was going to say, it's got to sound that way.
Got to sound good.
That's so funny.
But yeah, they did name it that because of its sort of glittery, glamorous look that they thought looked flashy like Elvis. And
very much so.
So here's what it looks like. So it doesn't actually look super like a worm, like you think of an earthworm. It has a series of interlocking scales on its back that are shiny. It looks like plate armor, and it's kind of flat, very shiny and iridescent. And underneath it, it has these gold, shiny bristles jutting out of it that you might mistake for legs, but aren't actually legs. They're just these bristles.
Oh.
And at its head, it has these things that look a little bit like pincers. They're actually not quite pincers. They're called palps. So palps are these appendages at the heads near the mouths of arthropods. You can see them in spiders and insects as well. So those are its palps. And so, sick. Yeah, it's rather flat looking, and it's kind of oval shaped. And so, like, you know, it's kind of alien and bizarre looking, but it gets way weirder than what you can just see at a glance. So
being on this show, you know, I will say I wasn't entirely surprised by that potential, but like, I'm excited. Please go on. I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt. When you said that, I was like, you know, I had a feeling you were going to say something like that.
Well, you know, there's always something hidden underneath the surface for these animals.
Amen.
So like,
Amen.
These are found in the deep sea near like hydrothermic vents, okay. as well as on the carcasses of fallen sea creatures, including whales. So
what?
When whales die, it's certainly sad for the whales, but it's a great boon for all of these underwater arthropods. These deep sea creatures that will feed on the whale's carcass, and it can feed a hell of a lot of animals and life.
I have a question.
Go for it.
Isn't there a term for like the kind of like minor or like micro ecosystem created by a whale carcass? I could be pulling this all the way out of my ass right here, but I felt like there was some word for like the micro ecosystem created. Micro ecosystem created by a dead whale in the ocean. Because, like, you're right.
I feel that. I feel like there is. I mean, I thought it had a specific. I mean, I think it's called like whale fall, actually.
Whale fall. I think that's it. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Whale fall. That's it. You're right. Whale fall. That's it. Nice.
Yeah.
That was the word. Whale fall.
Well, thank you for reminding me that that term exists. It is a cool term. Like, whale fall. Yeah. So, it's pretty. Straightforward, I guess. It's when a whale falls. It's something where there's something kind of grim and ghoulish about it, seeing this decaying whale, but it's also incredible how much life that can support. It's kind of like when a tree falls, a huge tree falls in the forest. There's something sad about that, right? This ancient tree falling and decaying, but then that tree feeds so many animals. In fact, an animal we're going to talk about later on the show.
Ooh.
A lot of these glamorous animals like to feed on dead things, but hey, look, you know, it's a living.
Love it.
So they will feed on things like whale carcasses. I know that the research team that collected some of these specimens actually found them on a whale carcass. So that must have been a fun treat. You're like zooming around looking at this whale carcass. It's all strange and kind of creepy. And then you see this like glitterous, glamorous little scale worm going like, hello, I'm here, and here I am eating a dead whale. I don't know how Elvis sounds, you know.
I was transported.
You know what I'm saying, eating a dead whale. That's a little better.
Damn, Katie. Okay, word. That was funny.
But like I said, like Elvis, not only in appearance, but a little bit assholey. They like to bite each other when they're not biting on some delicious whale fall carcass. So that is one of the reasons that they have these scales, is for protection not only from other animals and predator, but from their competition.
Literally from each other.
Oh, God. Yeah, from each other. And when they bite each other, it's fascinating. So I want you to, before I say anything else, just take a look at that picture that I've provided for you.
I mean, I'm horrified, obviously. This is a terrifying picture of
what
a demon.
What are you seeing?
I'm seeing a demon of the sea.
Okay.
it's almost like, I want to say, I mean, okay. It looks like a faceless worm with a bird's beak coming out of the center, but it's surrounded by like a Statue of Liberty of like just outward appendages. Like, I know they're not horns, but it looks like a wreath of horns sticking out around a bird's mouth coming out of an eyeless worm demon.
That's about right.
Yeah.
That's about right.
Thank you. I appreciate
so
that.
They actually have a proboscis that they can avert. So a proboscis is basically like a fleshy probe. It can mean like a nose. Right. It can mean a variety of different things. But it's basically a flesh probe, which is flesh probe. It's not really, that's not really a glam rock name, is it?
Could be a song, though. Could be a song.
I feel like this show is good at producing metal names more than glam rock names, like flesh probe.
Yeah, that would be a great metal name.
So they can evert it, which means basically like pushing it out from inside of them. And then in this proboscis, what you're seeing is a set of jaws, set of sharp jaws that they can use to snap at their food source, like a dead whale, or each other if they're feeling feisty.
Okay.
So just, you know, like in Aliens, like how the alien shoots out a smaller alien tongue with a set of jaws. It's just like that. It's like, boop. I'm going to snap you up. Another similar feature of the bobbit worm, where they can just basically shoot out a thing and like snap up. So do check out this video. I'm also including all this in the show notes as always, but there is a cool video of them.
I'm clicking to this video.
Fighting.
Okay. Oh, there they are. Oh, well, yeah, they are pretty. They're sizable. You'd see them. They're real. Oh. Oh, he just stuck his tongue out. The other one's going to do it, I bet. Oh, my gosh. He's waiting, so patient. Oh, goodness. He got a grip.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
In fact, their fights can be so violent that they can rip the scales off of each other. So a pretty, like, dark reboot of the rainbow fish, where it's just violently ripping off each other's scales.
Yeah, exactly. My scale.
Right. But yeah, that thing that looks like a tongue, like it's going like boop, that's actually its proboscis, and it has that gnarly set of jaws in the center of it that it's using to bite that other Elvis worm.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot right there. Oh my gosh.
I bet you're wondering why they're so iridescent and shiny and beautiful.
That's on the list of questions, most certainly.
The
list is getting longer.
I wonder it too, but I don't know. And nobody knows. Isn't that fun when I'm just like, hey, you wonder this thing? Sorry, nobody knows. It's a
literally
mystery.
No one knows. Don't you wish you could just ask them? I just want to what's up?
Why are you guys so angry all the time? What's with that weird like mouth boop thing that you do? Yeah, I mean, so they are actually blind. There's no reason for them to need this iridescence for like conspecific communication. So like it's probably not for sexual selection or anything like that, because they can't see it. It's possible it's for some way of crypsis, I suppose. Seems unlikely. It seems like it would just make them stick out. However, in these deep sea environments, you never know like how... That I wonder, like, maybe it interacts strangely with bioluminescence. That's a possible thing. Like, the refraction of bioluminescence may have some advantage. My suspicion is that it actually serves no purpose, the actual visual of it. Rather, it's just a byproduct of forming these tough scales. So like having these very tough, maybe crystalline structures in its scales, the nature of having them really tough at this molecular level also affects like how light is refracted off of the surface of these scales. So that would be sort of my guess. It's just a byproduct of making sure that these scales are really tough.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, like, you think about how, like, a diamond is really tough, and it's beautiful, and it's shimmering, right. Glittery.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. I buy that 1,000%. I'm with you.
And I also like that, you know, it's really subverting expectations. Like, to be tough, you have to be glamorous.
I like that. To be first, you must shine.
Speaking of the Bobbit worm, 20 million year old fossilized tunnels have been discovered beneath the ocean floor, over 7 feet or 2 meters long, but only a couple centimeters wide in diameter. It's thought that these were once home to an incredibly long worm, perhaps the ancestors of the Bobbit worm, as there's fossilized imprints made by these worms that seem to indicate they used these tunnels to drag their prey to an extra deep and watery grave. When we return, we're going to talk about a thought-provoking intersection of fashion and entomology.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
So, Daniel, you know that animals and humans have a weird relationship sometimes.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, for instance, like, my dog, I think, only sees me as, like, the peanut butter provider.
Aww.
You know,
at least a peanut butter warm blanket.
Right. That's true. A warm blanket.
Peanut butter human radiator.
a butt scratcher and peanut provider. Peanut butter provider.
Oh, I'm king butt scratcher. I'll tell you what. I feel like that's I feel like that if I'm being real, everybody's like, oh, that's a trick with dogs. They love getting scratched on the butt. Like, at what point is it not a trick anymore? It's like, oh, of course, a dog loves a good butt scratch right there.
Right. And
that's just, you know, that's it. That baseline dog knowledge.
Are they saying in my that it's like opinion. It's like a Konami code for a dog? I feel
sometimes.
Like
sometimes
I feel like the dogs are fairly obvious about one. I mean, like my dog Cookie will literally walk up to. She does this every day, all day. Like this is her favorite thing to do. Not joking. Walk up to you, turn around so her butt is near you, and then look over her shoulder as you know, like kind of look between you and the butt, like. Exactly, you're doing it. Yeah. What do you think about this?
Get going.
Yeah.
Scratch it.
And you can like hold your hand out and start wiggling your fingers and she will come over and sort of like dock her butt under your fingers and then so you can scratch it.
Wow. So that's a smart cookie you got raised there.
Yeah. She's smart whenever it serves her own interest.
I love that. A purposely smart and stupid dog that's like, yeah. Cookie, we need you to do this right now. I don't know. I'm a dog.
I don't speak English. What? And then I say, you want to get your butt scratched? She knows it. She knows what that means.
Oh, I want to get my butt scratched. Well, there you go.
Selective hearing. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
seriously.
She knows what a chicky pill is when she has these like chicken flavored hip nice. Joint supplements. And so if you want a chicky pill, she knows what that means.
She's down.
When I say you got to sit, she doesn't know what that means. That suddenly doesn't know what that means.
Have you seen that Simpsons episode? It's like the thing that translates baby talk, but it all, or like translates animal talk.
Oh,
and the person's
yeah.
like, what is your animal saying? It's like, this leash demeans us both. I wait for that day where we get the translation device. And Cookie was just saying, look, I sit on my own schedule, okay?
Right, right.
That's fact of the matter.
You shall provide me with butt scratchies and peanut butter. Your services for anything else are not required.
Not required. That's funny.
But, so that's all to say. That
yeah, long tangent.
I want to talk about something that it's both really interesting and it provokes a lot of thought and conversation, I think, about like our relationship to animals, because we're talking about insects and our feelings toward insects as a species can range from like they are delicious food to they are gross and I don't want anything to do with them to they are beautiful jewelry. So I think one case that really exemplifies this complex relationship we have with insects are the beautiful bejeweled living beetle jewelry originating from the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. So these living brooches are called maquesh. So they are beetles of the Zopharis genus, which is a group of species of beetles who are kind of long with this very like thick exoskeleton. They're kind of shaped like bowling pins a little bit. In fact, their exoskeleton is so tough. There is a species called the ironclad beetle. And if you're trying to mount them as a specimen, you know how like you have like a butterfly specimen where you stick a pin in it. Yeah. They do that for all sorts of insects. You actually have to drill a hole into them because you can't just push a pin through it. They're exoskeleton is that tough.
Yeesh.
So they are flightless. They have this little stubby head, a round thorax. So the thing that actually kind of looks like their head is actually their thorax. And then they have a long oval abdomen. And they range in color from black to sort of a black and white pattern. Lots of other different colors. They also come in this like really pretty gold color, not a shiny gold, but kind of a matte gold. And it's this species, this kind of gold Zophidorae species, that is often used for maquesh jewelry. So the jewelry is made by taking a living beetle and gluing like rhinestones on it, or a variety of jewels or decorations on it, or something like colorful thread or other ornaments. So there's like some adhesive is used, like some kind of glue, and then like you bedazzle the beetle, and then they attach a gold chain to the beetle just by gluing it, and then that's attached to like a pin that you pin to your blouse, and the beetle crawls around on your blouse. It's still alive, and just kind of like crawls around with all of this this sort of bedazzlement. And it's hard to know like when the tradition started. There's a lot of like sort of mixed information on it. And it's, you know, I don't think that I'm comfortable, you know, saying anything definitively, because it doesn't seem like it's been studied definitively in terms of like the origins of the cultural practice. This particular beetle, the
Maquesh
is actually the name of the jewelry, but the Zopharis beetle chosen because it's got this kind of slow, sluggish nature. It's pretty chill. It's got that pretty exoskeleton, but it can also survive for months without food or water. So,
oh man.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, it's like it sounds pretty creepy. So we'll get to more of that. But first, I want to talk about the beetles in the wild. So in the wild, the beetles live in dry forests and feed on rotting wood starches. So we were talking about earlier, you know, like the whale fall. Well, with Treefall is great for a lot of organisms in forest environments. These beetles are one of them. Nice. They have a metabolism that allows them to survive on small amounts of starch and very little water. So in theory, if you treat a Makesh beetle right, like you have a terrarium and you provide them with some starch and just like a little bit of water, like a moist sponge, you can keep them alive for their whole lifespan of about 3 years. But of course, there's a few catches to this, as there are for most things when we're talking about using animals for our own purposes. First and foremost is that they can spew formic acid out of their anus.
Great.
I mean, Okay. Actually, to me, that's like a benefit. Like, I want a brooch that, like, you know, like I kind of poke it and it just like sprays out formic acid. That's a great James Bond weapon.
That is a great James Bond weapon. Very like. Right. Now, what are the effects of that kind of acid on your skin, or is it smelly? What does it do?
It's unpleasant. It could give you a bad skin rash. Not a fun time. You shouldn't try to get it. Yeah, you don't want to get it on you. Traditionally, that issue has been solved by making the beetles very tiny diapers, like a little cloth diaper that goes near their backside and just sort of absorbs up that thing, the formic acid. Unfortunately, I was reading something that seemed to indicate, I don't know how true this is, but there was some like rumor about like how some vendors will use glue to actually seal up the anus, and then that's bad. Like, you can't do that. Yeah. It'll kill the beetle. And so, of course, I think the issue that is probably on a lot of people's minds is like, well, is this cruel? Is this cruelty towards these beetles? And I think it's a really complex issue. And I think whenever there's like a different cultural practice than our own, it's really easy for us to go like, oh, this is cruel, or this is strange. It's like too strange, because, you know, it's like, it's not normalized in our society. So like,
right.
Like in the way that a lot of our practices towards animals are, like, you know, so I think that the fact like it's living jewelry is such an unusual concept that I think it's easier to think of it as like, oh man, that's unnecessary and kind of cruel. But then you think about a lot of the things that we do in our culture. We kill insects all the time.
Yes.
In not super nice ways. We also, you know, just in our homes, like we kill pests all the time. Look, I'm not above killing, you know, ants who try to eat all my cereal.
I would be lying if I said I hadn't killed a bug before. It's foolish. I do my best to be, you know, sympathetic, especially to our spider friends who do a lot of the bug killing for us. But like, look, I've smashed some flies. I've smashed some bugs. That's just fact of the matter. I'm not innocent.
I try to relocate spiders whenever I find them, but I have to admit, like a few weeks ago, I saw a pretty big spider and just instinctively stomped it. Like, didn't even think. And then immediately after stomping, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry.
That immediate regret of, what have I done?
No.
Oh, that's funny. It's okay. So you're forgiven.
So, you know, we kill insects all the time. And so, you know, I feel like this aspect of like, oh, it's really cruel to do this is somewhat relative. The other argument would be like, well, but, you know, we kill insects maybe out of necessity. Keeping them as an ornament in this way, like, seems sort of unnecessary. Yeah. It's like, well, we also have things like we have state fairs where we have food animals there for, you know, entertainment purposes, and like we'll have like petting zoos with animals that will eventually go and be used for food. So I guess my point is like, there are certainly complaints you can have about certain cultural practices when it comes to animals, but I'm always hesitant to like point the finger at another culture where it's like, see this thing that they do that we don't do, like that's super weird.
That.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's completely fair. My only complaint would be that I mean, maybe as I explore the culture of this a little bit more, and I see in your picture down here, there's definitely Katie. By the way, for all the listeners, Katie has provided excellent resources for the guests to look at and get familiar with, and just like see what we're talking about. I'm surprised these people aren't going further with the bug itself. Like,
add a little top hat or...
Yeah, or just like, it might just be the video, but it's like, this seems pretty like rhinestones on some gold chains kind of shit. When we could get some real, like, I mean, you know, if this is a cultural thing here, I could see some like Swarovski ass, like really glitzed up bugs crawling around on your chest.
Premium bugs.
Premium bugs.
Yeah, I mean, these aren't necessarily super, super fancy things. Like, they often sell them for not that much money. Like, it could be, like, 10 U.S. dollars or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's also often sold to tourists. So, I'm not super clear on how much of it is directed towards tourists to the area and, like, how much of it is that locals do just... sort of as a local tradition. It's, you know, I can't pretend to be a cultural expert on this, and I couldn't quite suss that out in my research. But there is one thing that the artists who do this do seem to try to do is they don't, like, inhibit the beetle's movement. So they keep it, like, to the backs of the beetles. So they don't, like, put it, you know, like, on their actual heads. Like, it looks like it's on their heads, but that's actually their thorax.
Yeah.
And they don't, like, put it on their legs or anything so they can... Because, like, the point is for them to still be able to move around.
Yeah.
As long as they're not putting glue on the butt, I don't think... I mean, I'm sure that, like, the bejeweling of the beetles isn't great for the beetles, but I don't think it necessarily is that all that harmful. Again, because they have that really thick exoskeleton. The harmful thing would be, of course, if you don't, like, feed it or you know, like... You know, keep it in a terrarium. If you just kind of like keep it in a drawer for a few months until it dies, like that, then the beetle will not survive that. For me, I guess like the main issue I think that needs to be explored by ecologists, which I mean is they are doing. I'm not scolding them. Like, ecologists, get on this. But is whether or not like this is sustainable for the beetle population? Because like on a local level, it's probably fine. But if it gains a huge amount of popularity with tourists, collection of the beetles may exceed their ability to reproduce. The beetles are really, like, they have a very slow lifespan compared to other insects. Like, it takes them a long time to reach sexual maturation. They don't lay a huge amount of eggs. It's hard to estimate their population size because they like to live under logs, like under leaf litter and logs. So, like, actually finding them is kind of difficult. So getting a good sort of census of how many of these beetles are out there is actually quite tricky. But because they don't seem to reproduce that rapidly, there's fear that without some regulation, like there could be over collection of the beetles, and that would endanger their population, which I think just kind of shows how like it's really important for ecologists and biologists to work with people who study human culture to be able to come together and research things together so that we can like figure out ways to both preserve human culture but also preserve nature.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Amen.
The Makesh is not the only insect worn as jewelry. In ancient Egypt, scarab beetles were worn by soldiers to offer them spiritual protection. And in 2006, fashion designer Jared Gold included giant hissing cockroaches in his collection, basically copying the style of the Makesh brooches by bedazzling his cockroaches with Swarovski crystals and keeping them on a golden chain. These runway-ready cockroaches came with instructions of how to care for them and could live for over a year. Personally, I'm content to just admire the natural beauty of hissing cockroaches from nature photographs. When we return, we're going to investigate a lizard whose aquatic fashion is all about function.
LASIK LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
So now I want to talk about an extremely glamorous lizard that I think gives, like, David Bowie a run for his money in terms of, really? Like, how incredibly shiny they are, and also just how... I don't know. You know how, like the Space Odyssey thing? Well, these lizards like to go under the water and be little divermen.
Okay.
What's the David Bowie thing? It's like Rocket Man, right? Yeah. Rocket Man? Or is that Elton John?
That's Elton John.
Is he glam rock?
You thinking Ziggy Stardust?
Yeah.
That's very... David Bowie is super, super glam.
Elton John glam rock? Not really, is he? He's kinda...
I'm going to Google, is Elton John glam rock? Hold on.
This is very important for an evolutionary biology podcast to know whether Elton John is glam rock or not.
I would say so. Other performers associated with British glam.
I see. I guess it depends on whether you're using the phylogenetic classification system or the Linnean classification system of glam rock.
I mean, I'll say this. Look, the only people who are going to get mad at you about someone being or not being glam rock are the... Never mind.
Progressive glam rock.
There you go. British glam was very strictly different from U.S. glam rock, and I think that needs to be noted.
He actually fits more in the mod category. Thank you very much.
Uh-oh. No. But he's certainly glamorous and certainly a rocker. We'll definitely go with that.
Instead of spending time in outer space in a spacesuit, these lizards like to spend time underwater in a water suit. Or an air suit? Anyways, okay. A diver suit. So these are water anoles, a.k.a. scuba diving lizards. So water anoles are a species of small lizards found in Costa Rica in Central America. They're pretty small. They're about the size of a thumb. They're brown, although males do have this brilliant yellow dewlap. So what's a dewlap? It's a flap of skin under their chin they can fan out, which they use to attract females and intimidate males.
What?
I mean, have you ever seen a lizard like kind of stunting, flapping out its dewlap?
For sure. For a second, I thought, not skipping ahead per se, but I'm looking at this picture and I thought for a split second that its dewlap was the clear thing coming out of its nose, which I imagine is an air bubble.
That is an air bubble.
Like, he's got the dewlap on the top of his head?
No.
And it's clear? And he can breathe it?
I think I forgot to include an image of the dewlap, but it's very pretty.
That's okay.
It's very brilliant yellow.
Please. Nice. Awesome.
The ladies love a dewlap.
That's what I hear.
Because these little lizards are such tasty little snacks, not just for the females of their species, but for predators, and they're not like the fastest lizards in the land, they will take to the water to escape predators. They'll literally leap off of a rock and belly flop into the water. And so once underwater, they are safe from a lot of terrestrial or airborne predators, but they need to breathe because, They can't breathe water. These are reptiles. They do not. Although, you know, there are some reptiles like turtles who do gas exchange near an area near their cloaca, a.k.a. their butthole. But these lizards cannot. We have no evidence to suggest that these lizards can breathe through their buttholes like turtles.
Ah, so, shoot.
I know. Darn it. God darn it. I hate it when I'm like swimming and I'm like, wait, let me try it for a second.
I can't breathe through my butt.
I can't do it. I can't breathe through my butt. So they have a problem because they either stay underwater and drown or they go above the water and get eaten by a predator. So there is recent observations of these lizards that seem to suggest that they can create a wetsuit made out of air and form a bubble around their head that they can breathe through.
This is, truly, again, your research is so good. You've provided videos. I could not even imagine what this would look like, but now I have a video to look at, and it is extraordinary. I'm, like, blown away that they're able to, like, what is holding the water to their face this way?
That's a really good question, and while I haven't been able to find studies that are really exact about it, I would say that it is very similar to other times that we see water adhering to animals underwater. So with their diving bell spiders that can actually go underwater, and water, they will also form these kind of underwater. For the spiders, it's like this diving bell, that this little bubble that surrounds them that they can do gas exchange through. And for them, the air sticks to these teeny tiny little hairs all over their bodies. So the air literally sticks to these really small, fine hairs. For these lizards, I don't think they rely on hairs. Rather, I think it's the skin texture. So I think they have these really tiny structures on their skin, like these little tiny, probably microscopic indentations and texture on their skin that actually traps air on their skin and holds onto it through sort of a manner of surface tension. I mean, even like when you dive underwater, sometimes little bubbles can stick to your skin and you can see little air bubbles still sticking to you.
Yeah, totally.
But like for these lizards, their skin is such that I think it's probably you have really small structures on their skin that is able to really cling onto this water, such that you look at these lizards and underwater, it looks like they have this whole silvery sheen all over it, like their skin is made out of a mirror-like material, and that's all that trapped air all over their body reflecting light underwater like a mirror.
That's so cool.
Yeah, they're
these
like
these things are amazing.
It's beautiful. It's one of those things where you're like, wow, why do they look this cool? And then they come out of water, and you're like, eh, okay.
Hey, you know what? I'll save it for the underwater crowd. You know, if they want to be less shiny on top, save it for the underwater crowd. They deserve it more. They're not trying to eat you as much.
Yeah. So they can form this bubble around their head, and while the research on this is by no means complete, so this is all conjecture at this point, there's this idea that their heads have this kind of concave structure just so this air bubble can form, like this pocket can form over their nostrils, and when they like breathe out, it kind of bubbles up, and they breathe in, and it kind of bubbles down, so it's like this little bubble going up and down as they breathe.
Makes sense. That's so wild. Again, if I didn't have this video, I wouldn't be able to like put it together. I mean, I could understand and imagine, but it's just like it's truly a bubble coming off of their face and then just sucking back in.
Right.
Just, you know, it's wild.
Like, have you ever like blown a bubble with some bubble gum? Yeah. And instead of just like blowing the bubble, you kind of like breathe in and out. And you're like,
yeah.
And then you do like a Darth Vader voice, like,
there you go.
I'm here to chop off hands and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Could you imagine? I want to see that recut. The dude. Wow.
But yeah, I mean, your reaction is kind of similar to researchers who discovered this, because they just incidentally discovered that they seem to breathe this way through observations. They put underwater cameras down there because they noticed that some of these lizards would like dive underwater and then they would pop up a few feet away, but some of them would dive underwater and then just disappear. And they're like, Now, that can't be right. Like, that can't be a good survival strategy to just drown yourself whenever a predator comes at you. So sure enough, they found that these guys can spend up to about 15 minutes underwater. And using these underwater cameras, they found this behavior of, like, them seeming to breathe through these bubbles. Now, it hasn't been, like, scientifically proven that they are actually breathing through these bubbles. It's just observation, like you looking at this video. But it seems fairly likely that that's the case, because that seems to be what's going on.
Hmm. Wow.
And also, because they can last so long underwater, it seems like this helps them last longer without having to hold their breath the whole time.
Wow. These are fascinating little beasts right here.
They really are.
You've really done it.
And they're so shiny. I love how just like they have like mirror skin. You know what I mean? Totally.
The shine, especially, like, again, love that it's primarily for the underwater crowd. It's like they're just so shiny. And I almost feel like you would mistake it. I mean, I shouldn't say mistake it, but like you might think that there's like a small like pocket knife in the water if you were to look down and see just like the body of one of these little guys down there. Just like, whoa, that is gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I also like the idea that like above water it's like, eh, but underwater, it's like Miley Cyrus turning into Hannah Montana.
Wow. And that's where they shine.
Yeah. It's like Miley Cyrus, whatever, just normal girl. Exactly. And then she turns into
normal girl.
Hannah Montana.
Wow. That's funny.
Well, I think we've done it. I think we've found some of the coolest glam rockers in the animal kingdom.
These are truly glamorous animals you have shared with me today, Katie. I'm touched. These are awesome. Thank you so much.
I do. Before we go, I do want to address a listener question. So listener Izzy B writes in and says, "Hey, creature peeps, there's been a meme Twitter thread popping up now and again claiming that the Uncanny Valley exists as a deep psychological remnant from our early hominid ancestors' interspecies competition for resources. So frequently, these conversations use the idea that animals, even our own pets, don't experience the Uncanny Valley as proof. But that rings false to me. I am a puppet maker and have lots of..." Sorry. I love it. I love this email so much. I love it when you guys write into me. When I was reading this and then I got to "I am a puppet maker," like, I almost screamed in excitement.
That's amazing.
Anyways, I'm going to continue reading this, but like,
please.
So,
sorry.
Yeah. "I am a puppet maker and have lots of experience of dogs and cats absolutely losing their quack in terror of puppets, usually human-based puppets, but sometimes those based on other animals. What is this if not the Uncanny Valley? The mental rejection and innate fear of something that resembles the familiar but doesn't achieve a fully believable resemblance. As someone familiar with animal psychology, I was wondering if you had any thoughts on the matter. On a completely different note of the arc of the universe bending towards crab, one of our latest puppets is a massive crab dragon. Although it fails to copy the evolutionary perfect crab body plan, it is painted to look like a coconut crab. We were even listening to the carcinization episode while painting her. Here are pictures, Izzy B." Thank you so much, Izzy. When you said you were a puppet maker, I was excited. I love puppets. But I was expecting a small puppet, which I was
Marionette,
still excited
maybe.
For. I was still really excited for. This is a life-sized freaking dragon. It's massive. It's three people are operating this thing. It's a huge, actual, real-life dragon puppet the size of a freaking real-life dragon.
It's incredible.
And it
is incredible.
It is painted like a coconut crab. It's absolutely beautiful. It's amazing. And I, if possible, I'm going to include a link to these photos in the show notes. I'm so blown away by this. This is a beautiful puppet. I actually, like, a note about the Uncanny Valley before I get into answering the question. I actually love the Uncanny Valley. Like, I actively seek out feeling. It's a fun, exciting feeling for me. It's like, now, I don't like roller coasters. Like, I hate roller coasters. They scare me. But I imagine the feeling that other people get when they go on a roller coaster of like that. It's like kind of scary, but exciting.
That thrill.
That's what I get from like looking at weird animatronics or Uncanny Valley things. Like,
I love it.
I love animatronics. I love puppets. I just love that feeling of like there's a certain sort of offness to this thing. It's like not quite a human, but it's almost a human. Like I really, it's just thrilling for me. So this is a really exciting thing for me.
Nice. This is an incredible puppet. This is truly, I would totally expect to see this at the front of a very well-produced parade. This is like, what's a puppet show? Not like a puppet show though, but like a Cirque du Soleil
kind of thing. The Muppets.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely
a Cirque du Soleil production. Yeah, no, it's.
This is a centerpiece right here. This is gorgeous.
Or like the Dark Crystal. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like
totally. Yes.
Oh, yes. I loved. By the 100%. Way, I love the Dark Crystal. I also like the reboot, or not remake, but the reboot.
There was a reboot. I hadn't checked out the reboot.
It's good.
Yet,
but I mean, liked it. Yeah.
Gotta get my Skeksis on.
If you liked the original one, you'll definitely like the remake. It's just a reboot. But it definitely recaptures sort of it's all practical effects. It's really, really beautiful.
I love that. I'm so down. Great.
In terms of the question about whether animals feel the uncanny valley, I actually really agree with this listener. I think that while we don't necessarily have evidence that says that animals definitely do feel the uncanny valley, it's like hard to, you know, quantify what an animal is feeling. I definitely think that animals would have the capacity to feel that based on certain animal behavior. So some of the things that we know, like, well, first of all, this is maybe not super scientific, but I've definitely seen a lot of videos of cats on like TikTok and stuff reacting to their owners having a like a cat filter on their face, you know, like on Snapchat,
where it's like a cat face filter
on their face, so it looks like the human has a cat face on the phone, and the cats like look at the phone, look really startled, look back at their human and look at the phone and like run away.
So that's
interesting to me that the cats get really freaked out by humans wearing like cat makeup or having that like cat filter. Of course that's totally anecdotal. Less anecdotal, I think, is, well, no, I guess it's still anecdotal. Anyways, another thing that we've seen is like there's this TV show called Spies in the Wild where they put like Spy in the Wild. It's hilarious, but also a great nature documentary. They create these animatronic versions of animals so that they can have cameras like watching the animals up close. But it's also kind of funny because like most of the camera work in the show isn't from the animatronic animals. So it seems like that's something of a gimmick.
Got it.
But it's still really interesting. I think the most interesting part of the show is not like the up close shots that these animatronics get, but it's the reactions that the animals have to the animatronics. So a lot of animals don't seem to really think anything of it. But once you start to get to primates, their reactions are very interesting. There are these langurs that were very tentatively playing with this animatronic langur, and then it fell down and like broke and stopped moving. And then a bunch of langurs all came over. Langurs are a type of monkey, and they came and surrounded this thing, like 20 or 30 of them, just like looking and like carefully touching it and looking. It looked like they were holding a funeral almost, but it was I think they were just so freaked out and fascinated by what this was, where like it seems kind of like a dead monkey, but they weren't sure what it was, but they were fascinated and it seemed kind of freaked out. So I think that, and you also look at like things that we have done research on where dogs seem to pay particular attention to human faces on the side of the face that's more expressive. Like our expressions are not completely symmetrical. Like there's usually one side of the face that is a little more expressive, and the dogs seem to prefer that side of the face. And so I think that kind of like facial recognition and it's the whole kind of concept of this idea that like only humans would be in some sort of like competition with other hominids. That doesn't make any sense. There are so many species who have very similar species that they are in competition with. I mean, like, you know, canines, like you, like wolves and other canids would be in competition. You know, I mean, like a dog and a coyote, like coyotes, will often kill dogs. So like they have to be very careful around each other. Different kind of feline species, like, you know, a cheetah is no friend to like a lion. So it's, you know, it's there are all sorts of competition amongst species that maybe don't look exactly like each other, but are somewhat similar. So this idea that the uncanny valley evolved in humans because we were competing with other species and we had to be aware of like ones that were kind of off. It's like, well, I would say that would apply to, you know, most intelligent social animals.
Great. I support that entirely. I obviously do not have a professional opinion on the matter, but I would like to think that, like, you know, obviously, language is something that is created by humans for humans.
Yeah.
But I think for for the suggestion to be that dogs and you know, certain animals don't have the capability to semi-recognize something or have to wrestle with something as recognizable or not, I think, you know, to say do they experience the uncanny valley, it's like, well, they don't call it that. But yeah, they know when something is there and doesn't. It's like, this is not quite right.
Right.
This is not. I'm confused by this. I support you entirely. I think it's 100%.
Yeah. In fact, there's a study of macaques that looked at their eye gaze of like computer generated images of macaques and like ones that were like sort of realistic, actually kind of cartoonish. They sort of looked at a little bit, didn't really seem to care. They're real photos they looked at for a long time because they were interested. But ones that were almost exactly realistic, but not quite, they were like CGI, they didn't like to look at it at all. They like spent as little time looking at it as possible, which, you know, it's hard to know exactly how to interpret those results. But one way of interpreting them is that they did not enjoy looking at that CGI version of the macaque. And so they would avert their gaze because they found it unpleasant, which is how humans experience the uncanny valley. So I would say this has not been researched enough to really say definitively, but I think all the research that we have, as well as general trends in animal behavior, I think would indicate that, yeah, this could definitely happen for animals. And I don't see any reason to rule it out for animals.
Right. I agree. I'm with you.
That's why my dog hates Polar Express, the movie. I thought it was just because she hated Tom Hanks, but I think it's all those weird kids.
It's all those weird looking kids. That's funny. That's wonderful. Oh, Cookie.
Also, when I make a weird noise, she gives me such a look. Like, she does the little head turning thing, but like if I do sort of a weird whistling noise, like where I'm kind of sucking air in through my teeth or something in a weird way, or if I blow across a bottle and it makes that like weird hooty noise, like she just like, she looks at me like I've been possessed, and she's clearly, she's like,
what is this?
She's interested, but she's concerned I've been bewitched.
Totally. Totally. Different noise. Mm-hmm. I'm unfamiliar.
Oh, and she hates it when people ride on bikes or skateboards. Like,
really?
She just, it's something like about the human going faster than they should that like she loses her mind over. She hates it so much. Like, you're a human, but way too fast. This isn't right.
Yeah. Why is one part of you moving, but the other parts of you are not? What's up with that?
It's a bicycle human centaur. Evil.
I'll bite off its legs.
What bedevilment is this? Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, I think that'll do it for today. Thank you so much.
Yay!
For this email. Love the pictures of the puppet. I will share those. And yeah, if you have a question and you want me to answer it, send an email to creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com, and I will either try to answer it over the email or even on the show. So yeah, thank you so much for that. And Daniel, thank you so much for being on here today.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. It's such a great show. One of my favorite podcasts. So I'm always honored to be included.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. You used to engineer the dang thing.
Did used to engineer the dang thing, but then we got so, you know, got so big and busy, they spread us all out there. They're like, Dan, I can't do that anymore. You gotta go do this other thing. I'm like, ugh.
But the bright side is now we've got Zach.
Yay!
He's here, you guys.
Well, Zach's the man.
He's actually
shrouded by wave.
He's actually
there we go.
He's actually a dolphin, so he can only speak in squeals and ees.
Yes. And confetti emojis.
That's him saying yes, I engineered it.
Lovely.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at DJ_Danl, and you can find me on Twitch at the same, twitch.tv/DJ_Danl. Check it out. We do fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And listen to the podcast. Shoot. Listen to Creature Feature. I mean, you're already here, so great job. But check out the other podcasts on the network.
Yeah, check out other podcasts on the network. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at Creature Feature Pod on Instagram, at Creature Feet Pod on Twitter. That's F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. That is something very different. and as always, I'm Katie Golden. You can find me on Twitter just for my Katie thoughts. And thank you so much to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina.
That song is great.
I know, it's so good. I love it.
Can I get a corny joke before we leave?
Do it.
Since you said creature feet,
yeah,
you were like, no, it's creature feet, F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. That's a different website. That website is OnlyFins. I'm sorry.
Thank you. No, I'm don't sorry. Never apologize. Thank you so much for that. Oh my god. Thank you so much. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows. See you next Wednesday. Only Finn.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.